Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
This Day in History class is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome to This Day in History class, a show that lives in the past, the present, and the future, though mostly in the past. I'm Gabe Lussier, and today we're talking about one of the first international book tours in history, the time when Charles Dickens brought one of his most popular stories to one of his least favorite countries. The day was December 2nd, 1867. British author Charles Dickens began his first American reading tour at Tremont Temple in Boston, Massachusetts. Several hundred people attended the sold-out show, and many more would have gladly paid the $2 admission had there been more seats to go around. One especially disappointed fan was fellow author Henry James, who noted glumly that it had been, quote, impossible to get tickets. Two other writers had better luck than James, as both Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow managed to score seats at the show. Most of Dickens' performances lasted about 2 hours. He would open with a 90-minute reading, pause for a brief intermission, and then wrap up with a second, shorter reading. For his first show in Boston, Dickens closed with a selection from his novel The Pickwick Papers, but the main event was a reading of A Christmas Carol. The famous story had been published in England 24 years earlier, and was an immediate hit with Victorian readers. However, the book had failed to find an audience in the United States, partly because Dickens had criticized the country during his first visit in 1842. He was appalled by slavery and found Americans to be selfish and ill-mannered. On his return to Europe, he published a scathing travelogue, and then followed it up with a brutal satire of the country in his next novel. This ensured that most Americans liked Dickens about as much as he liked them. The one exception to the author's distaste for the U.S. was Boston. After spending a month in the city during his first visit, Dickens declared that, quote, Boston is what I'd like the whole United States to be. It's no surprise, then, that he chose the city as the first stop of his U.S. tour in 1867. Luckily for him, the 25 years since his last visit had cooled the anger of American readers, and he was met by an enthusiastic crowd at every public appearance. Dickens began performing public readings in Great Britain in 1853. For the first 5 years, the readings were done strictly to raise money for charity, but they proved so popular that the author started doing them for profit in 1858. It's worth noting that reading tours were unusual for the time, with Dickens being the first major author to perform his own works in public. His publishers were eager to repeat the success of the European readings in the United States. It took a bit of convincing, but in the end, they persuaded Dickens to return to America for a 4-month reading tour. It likely helped that the author earned more from these performances than from his actual writing. Another reason Dickens agreed to the tour was that he just enjoyed performing. And make no mistake, these were definitely dramatic performances. He didn't just stand on stage and read aloud from a book. Instead, the readings were like one-man shows, where the author would do different voices, gestures, and physical expressions to bring the various characters to life. He even rewrote certain passages from his books to make them better suited for live performance. He wasn't on an empty stage either. Dickens used the same props as he did in England: a big maroon backdrop, a series of gas lamps, and a custom-built waist-high desk that had a block for Dickens to rest his elbow on and a rail near the bottom for him to rest his foot. He also held whichever book he was reading from, but that was really more of a prop. Dickens had prepared so extensively for the tour that he knew most of the material by heart. He reportedly prepped for shows by practicing in front of a mirror for several hours. Despite all this planning, the shows weren't static. The more Dickens performed a certain piece, the more he would tinker with it by adding, subtracting, or reordering the material. A Christmas Carol is a great example of this refining process, as it was one of his most frequent and most popular readings. It takes about 3 hours to read the whole story as written, but by the time Dickens returned to Boston, he had cut that time in half. The copy he used for his performances shows the extensive edits he made to bring the piece down to 90 minutes. Tellingly, the changes emphasize dialogue and characters, while drastically reducing the role of the narrator. Among the deletions are all 37 times when the narrator refers to himself as I, me, or my, as well as the 18 instances when the narrator directly addresses the reader as you. These deliberate changes suggest that Dickens wanted to minimize his own voice so that the audience instead could be caught up in the story itself. The tactic seemed to work well, too. After the first public reading of A Christmas Carol at the Tremont Temple in Boston, Dickens' agent knew they had made the right call in returning to America. He described the audience reaction, writing, quote, "When at last the reading of the carol was finished, and the final words had been delivered, a dead silence seemed to prevail, a sort of public sigh, as it were, only to be broken by cheers and calls, the most enthusiastic and uproarious." But Dickens' thoughtful performance wasn't the only reason the crowd was so receptive. The message of the story seemed to strike a chord as well. In fact, many scholars believe Charles Dickens had a lasting influence on Christmas traditions in New England. By the 1860s, most of the country had gotten on the same page about how to celebrate Christmas, but in Massachusetts, there were still some holdouts. The Puritan population distrusted the holiday, viewing it as just an excuse for their less pious neighbors to get drunk and party. That view had begun to change in New England by the 1860s, thanks largely to an influx of Irish Catholic immigrants who had no such qualms with the holiday. That said, when Dickens arrived in 1867, children in Boston still had to go to school on Christmas Day, and neither Massachusetts nor New Hampshire recognized Christmas as a public holiday. It's believed that Dickens' readings of A Christmas Carol provided the last push Boston needed to fully get into the Christmas spirit. Residents warmed to the holiday thanks to the book's cozy descriptions of roaring fires and caroling children, but the real game changer was the idea that Christmas wasn't just a day of revelry, but an opportunity for charity and goodwill. This shift in thinking led some New Englanders to reassess their position on the holiday, lest they be viewed as Scrooge-like themselves. Case in point, a Boston businessman was so moved by Dickens' reading of A Christmas Carol that he closed his factory on Christmas Day and sent a turkey to every one of his workers. As for the author, he enjoyed America a lot more the second time around, especially since the tour brought in $140,000 in profits, or nearly $2 million today. Unfortunately, Dickens was in poor health throughout the tour, suffering from flu-like symptoms, insomnia, and inflammation of the foot. On April 8, 1868, he circled back to Boston and gave the final performance of the tour. He closed by telling the audience, quote, "In this brief life of ours, it is sad to do almost anything for the last time. Ladies and gentlemen, I beg most earnestly, most gratefully, and most affectionately to bid you, each and all, farewell." 2 years later, Charles Dickens died at the age of 58. Many of his works are now considered classics of English literature. His most enduring stories have been adapted countless times for all sorts of mediums, but none more so than A Christmas Carol, the story that Dickens himself adapted for a listening audience all those years ago. I'm Gabe Lousier, and hopefully you now know a little more about history today than you did yesterday. If you'd like to keep up with the show, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TDIHCShow. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can write to us at thisday@iheartmedia.com. Thanks to Chandler Mays for producing the show, and thank you for listening. I'll see you back here again tomorrow for another day in history class.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Turns out a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the Dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyers.com today.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.